All right, and we're on. Introducing Deepak G. Vancouver, Managing Director at Dell Technologies Capital, the investment arm of Dell Technologies. Deepak, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, Joseph. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Great. I'm good, mate. I'm good. Busy away. I know you've been a busy bunny as well.
Indeed, indeed. It's great here for cyber again.
Absolutely, absolutely. Are you planning on being at RSA in a few sort of weeks from now?
Absolutely.
Yeah, brilliant.
I live like a mile and a half from Moscone Center, so I can't miss it.
You've got no excuse, mate, for not coming. But Deepak, look, thanks for coming on the show. Let's dive straight into it. With all my guests, I like to sort of go back to where it all began for you, but then also how you got into to venture capital.
Excellent. So I grew up in a family of doctors in India, first non-doctor in three generations, but I just fell in love with computers. So I became an engineer, worked at Sun Microsystems for a little bit, building supercomputers, and then wanted to join startups. And through that process, I met a few VCs, and they were surprised that I knew quite a bit about startups. I was recruiting for the startup, so I had to do my diligence. That's how I built relationships with a few VCs, and one of them ended up hiring me as an intern during my MBA, and that was General Catalyst in 2009. And then I joined them full time in 2010 after I graduated. 7 years there, and then I just finished 7 years at Dell Technologies Capital now.
Nice. The VC world does seem like quite secretive, and I know there's a few books like Venture Deals and things like that, which sort of gives you a bit of an insight into the VC world. Like you say you studied, was that a venture capital course or what did
No,
how
it was
did
just a
you?
general business school class. I got my MBA from Yale in New Haven, Connecticut, and during that time I was recruiting to join startups,
Yeah.
but I ended up joining the VC world instead.
Nice. So General Catalyst, 7 years there, started as an intern, and what was your trajectory through there?
Yeah, in 7 years I moved from intern to senior associate principal and a partner. I covered enterprise B2B sector, initially in the Boston office and then in the Bay Area office of General Catalyst.
Yep.
And now, halfway through my 7 year tenure, I just fell in love with cyber investing. Just wanted to make the world a safe place. And I thought there was a do good while making money aspect of investing in cyber. And since then, never looked back. I do both cyber and infra investing at Dell Technologies Capital, but spend more than half my time in cyber.
Nice. In terms of Dell Technologies Capital, can you just give the audience an insight as to who you guys are and how you're broken away as the investment arm from Dell Technologies?
We are the investment arm for Dell Technologies, and our goal is to invest in the best B2B enterprise tech startups. We usually invest in early stages, seed, Series A, Series B. We lead or co-lead rounds. We have been in business for about 11 years or so. 150 investments, approximately about 80 acquisitions, and about 8 IPOs in that time period. Cyber is about 25% or so of our investment portfolio. We were among the first investors in Zscaler, in Netskope, Cylance. We have been investing quite a bit in cloud security. We led the Series A in RedLock. We were a seed investor in Twistlock, CloudNox, and Alarm. We led a Series B in Humio, which was acquired by CrowdStrike, Zingbox in IoT security that went to Palo Alto, and Lightspin more recently that was acquired by Cisco. We also do a lot of non-cyber investing like developer tools. We were early investors in Mongo, JFrog, enterprise infrastructure like Arista Networks. More recently, like everybody else, we've been spending a lot of time in AI, the intersection of AI and cyber, the intersection of AI and business processes, both back-end and front office processes, and AI itself, AI infrastructure itself. But I still continue to love cyber a lot. I think the number of attacks are increasing, the attack surfaces are increasing, bad actors are increasing. So we all need to be prepared.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, a fascinating space. I'm not
Yeah.
surprised you love investing in it. How are Dell set up as a CVE, like a corporate VC, different to like the Ciscos of this world? Because I know they like looking at more like growth stage rather than the real early stage. How are you set up differently then?
We run independently. We are not just a strategic VC for Dell. We are here to make money for Dell.
Got it.
So we are measured only on money in and money out. We want to make sure that we deliver great returns to the Dell Technologies balance sheet. We also hope that a lot of investments we invest in, either Dell's customers or Dell can benefit from that, of course. And where possible, we'll try to make those connections. But we are a business unit that runs for profit,
Got
and
it.
we're here to make a profit. And we also want to make sure we do everything right for our founders, like any other VC firm does. The only way to build reputation in this industry is to invest in the best founders and make sure you do a good work for them, so that they refer you to other good founders. We are first principles thinkers. We spend a lot of time with the Fortune 500 customer and buyer network, CISOs, CIOs, CDOs, CMOs, etc. We want to understand where the problems are and what problems have been solved, what need to be solved. In cyber, we look at investments in two broad categories: category creation, which is like new budget line items, new problems that have not been solved before, and category disruption, which is existing problems, but because of changes in technology or market dynamics, the existing incumbents are not innovating fast enough to solve the needs of customers, so which are ripe for disruption. So we look at both those categories. Yes.
Can you give an example of like a category disruptor and a new category? Obviously, new category, I'm imagining security AI, but have you got any specific examples?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Right, like Zscaler was a category disruptor. They changed the secure gateway, web gateway market and the VPN market, and now it's called the SASE market. It's a much bigger market now, and a lot of it was due to the works of Zscaler and its competitors in the space. Another example would be Cylance, which started disrupting the endpoint security market. We were an early investor in them, and of course, the big winner in the space has been CrowdStrike. There were many existing endpoint security companies, but CrowdStrike, Cylance, and SentinelOne became the new god in endpoint security. Another example, maybe we're not an investor, like Palo Alto. Palo Alto, when they got started, was a category disruptor for the firewall market. Now, coming to category creation, I think most things in cloud security are new categories. And we were the Series A investors in RedLock, which created the CSPM category, along with a few other startups. Cloud Security Posture Management, Twistlock, which was one of the early category leaders in what became called a CWPP. And now CSPM, CWPP, and a couple of other new categories have been co-opted into what is called a CNAPP. That's a new Gartner and industry terminology. So those are some examples.
Nice.
Right. Single sign-on was not a category, and Okta made it a category along with Ping Identity. So these are some examples, and we
Nice.
invest in both. And cyber is good because there are always new opportunities for new category creation compared to a lot of other areas in enterprise B2B. Cyber provides probably the best fertile ground for new category creation. Good for founders, good for investors, and even better for customers because there is always innovation available to address new problems they are facing.
Outside of category, what else do you look for when you're making your investments?
So I would say, the rest are very surgical and first and tactical. First, like, what do we think of the founders? Will they come across really well in front of enterprise buyers like CISOs? Will they have credibility and authenticity? So authentic founders who are credible, who can build great products and know how to sell. It's kind of looking for a unicorn all in one, right? Not easy, but that's what we got to find, right? We also looked, if we come in a little bit later, we also look to see who the existing investors are and how can we as syndicate help the founders. It takes an army to create a new successful startup. So whatever we can do to make that possible, we'll help. Of course, if the startup has been in business for a couple of years, when we come in for Series A, Series B, they do have customers, right? So we call customers and ask for customer references. We also see what is the kind of talent they have attracted. Are the founders talent magnets? Are they getting the best product thinkers? Are they getting the best engineers? Are they getting the best 10x salespeople? And I'm sure you've been helping quite a few of our portfolio companies in that process. So, kudos to you and your team for doing a great job for many of our portfolio companies. So it's about the ability to attract customers and ability to attract employees.
How do you
That's
at the
all
real,
matters.
how do you at the really, really early stage, pre-customer, maybe sometimes even pre-product at all, when you're assessing a founder, is there like a specific trait that you sort of look for, or how do you like, what is it that you see in a founder to
You know,
think?
fire in the belly is one trait. Another one is authenticity. Okay, why is this person the most authentic person to solve this problem? Will she or he be considered seriously by a customer? It could be because of some research they did in university. It could be because of like what they did in a prior life, maybe building another startup or leading a product line in another startup or another big tech company. What is it that makes them authentic? Right. There are always problems that need to be solved, but why is this person the authentic founder to solve that problem?
Yeah, got it. Why would a founder then use or think about fundraising with Dell Technologies Capital? Because it's also on them to assess you guys, because there's plenty of other
Definitely,
options.
definitely, right? And look, the best founders always have 10 VCs who want to invest in them, if not more. And I think it's like, look, everybody has their sales pitch to founders. I think our sales pitch is like, look, we are first principle thinkers. We will roll up our sleeves and help. We understand that building companies and building a successful company is like one of a kind path. Like, in the venture world and startup world, failure is repeatable, but success is not. So you need to go figure out what's your own path to success. If you just start looking at past patterns, you only repeat failures. You can't repeat success. So we are like very bespoke thinkers, and like for if you want people who can roll up their sleeves and help you from negotiating the first contract with your customers, or helping you close a candidate, or doing product discovery with a few customers, and also take a hands-off approach when you don't need help. I think we will tailor our approach based on the situation, based on the need. And luckily, through the support of our founders before, we have been in a lot of good startups. I've mentioned some of those names before, right? And that network really helps our next generation founders because they can talk to people who have walked their paths 1 year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 10 years ago, and learn from them. There's nothing better than learning from people who walked your path, a few years ago,
For sure.
before, right? And I think that's the network that we provide helps. And when the startups become big, potentially, there are partnership opportunities between Dell and the startups as well. And we don't, and even that depends on the situation. It works sometimes, really well, and it's our duty to advise in which situations it would work well. And we also have a very good portfolio development team that provides marketing, sales development, and customer outreach support to our early stage founders. And they are among the best in the industry. The other thing is that we're not a cyber-only investor. We invest in a lot of adjacent areas, from developer tools, infrastructure, and so on. So we can see the interplay between all patterns and how that impacts cyber startup building. and cyber problems. And I think that perspective is something we bring to the table.
Yeah, love it. In terms of like, are there any common mistakes founders make when they're approaching you looking to fundraise? Would you say there's some sort of common things that maybe that you could share some practical advice to stop founders from potentially doing when they're pitching to somebody like you?
Yeah, I think I think many times if you're creating a new category, we see a lot of founder pitches that say there's like a $10 billion TAM or $20 billion TAM. Firstly, there are very few 10 or $20 billion TAMs in cyber, extremely few. And new categories are not 10 or $20 billion TAMs. So don't overproject the TAMs. Now understand if it's a new category or an existing category. So new category, be realistic about what the TAM is today and why do you think it can grow and become big in 3 years from now, 5 years from now. So that's one thing. I think the second thing is, let's say you have 30 minutes or 60 minutes with a VC for the first meeting. Don't spend most of the time talking about why you're solving a problem and what is the problem you're solving. Most good VCs will probably know very quickly why is this an important problem to solve. You need to convince them on why you are the right person to solve this problem, why you are the right person to build a successful startup in this space, and how are you thinking about the steps to increase the probability of success and decrease the probability of failure in your journey. Don't spend more than the first few minutes talking about the problem. Talk about what is the product you're building? Talk about why is that product unique? If you have competition, why is that better than the competition? And then talk about how you're going to start acquiring customers and how you're going to start building your team to build a product and acquire customers. That's what we look for. Because many times you've seen pictures where we're 45 minutes in and the founder is just still talking about a problem they're solving.
Yeah, I hear you. In terms of you've had a lot of success with previous exits, have you had any sort of regrettable didn't invest in those guys and they've gone on to be a great success? Have you ever missed any shots?
Oh, of course. Like all VCs, we would claim that we can easily claim we missed all the successes in the industry, right? Yes, definitely, definitely. I think there are a lot of companies which the list is very long, and the list will be very obvious, so I won't go into the list. But yes, we do have our regrets for sure.
Cool. I appreciate the honesty. What about with RSA coming up? I know like last year it was all about zero trust and obviously AI security. Do you think we'll be seeing the same sort of trends going into this one and for the next year or two, I guess? What are you thinking and seeing?
No, I think AI security will still continue to be a trend. Zero trust will still continue to be a trend. I think AI security, though, I think the hype is very far ahead of the reality because enterprises haven't adopted AI models at that pace because of a lot of regulatory data residency, privacy, and cost of the AI model issues as well. And the number of AI models, types of AI models available is just so overwhelming. So I think AI security probably is still in the hype phase, and the industry revenue is still pretty low in that, but it will happen. We just don't know when it's going to happen. I think the zero trust is really like a framework. It's not a category. Like everything needs to be zero trust, right? Like every product needs to be zero trust, right? And there's definitely a lot of zero trust whitewashing or a zero trust washing going on in the industry for sure. If a 30-year-old vendor comes and says our 30-year-old product is zero trust, really hard for me to believe that, right? And if that old vendor has designed a product in the last 1 or 2 years, then I can believe that it's like a zero trust product. But if it was designed 30 years ago, it's really hard for me to believe that. I think there are some perennial problems that exist, which is like shortage of talent, training of employees on how to think about cyber readiness. Another perennial problem is does not get enough funding is like, how do I make SMBs really secure? Because it's a cyber poverty chasm today. SMBs have like no access to the sophisticated technologies. Big enterprises can spend in defense in depth and have five products, one behind the other, trying to make sure bad actors don't go through. SMBs cannot do that. So I don't think there's enough focus on cyber poverty of SMBs in the industry. Cloud security has now gone from a niche market into a mainstream market like identity or endpoint security or network security. So we will see a lot more happening in cloud security. We are going to see a lot of public companies in cloud security appear. Maybe Wiz will be the first one to go public as a pure cloud security for IaaS clouds companies. And maybe there'll be others too that go public in that space. Of course, Palo Alto Prisma Cloud has already built a huge business in the space, two of which acquiring a lot of startups and building a lot internally as well. Two of the startups they acquired were ours, RedLock and TwistLock. So I think cloud security becomes mainstream. Then I think how can AI change security operations? I think we are going to see a lot more discussions about that, especially SOC operations. The deep fakes in the industry are increasing.
Massive, yeah, really
Yeah,
big.
and we are going to see deep fake phishing happen, for example, right?
It's
Deep fake
happening.
messaging and phishing happening. And so how is that going to change email security, message security? Those are to be decided. Honestly, look, the number of machine identities is increasing quite a bit. We'll probably have 100 times, 1,000 times more machine identities than human identities very soon. And these machine identities could be API access tokens, secrets. It could be like just simple keys and certificates. But yeah, we are going to. There's a massive increase in the number of machine identities. Software supply chain is going to get a lot more complicated by the usage of AI models. So yeah, the list
It's
is long.
exciting, mate.
Yeah,
Very exciting.
it is exciting. And so I think we are all looking for people to solve some of these next generation problems, and we're always in the hunt for this. RSA is obviously like the global gathering of cybersecurity practitioners, professionals, hackers, investors, founders, and vendors, and customers, of course, right? So I'm very excited for it.
Deepak, we can talk for hours, man, but definitely looking forward to catching up at RSA. And just again, thanks for coming on the show. If anyone does want to reach out, just looking to fundraise, I'll put your details all in the show notes as well.
Definitely. And thank you so much, Joseph, for having me, and thanks for Aspiron Search too.
Thank you very much. Pleasure is all mine, man.
Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's show, please like and share with your friends and colleagues, as this is really important for the show's reach. If you'd like to be our next guest or are interested in Aspiron Search's staffing solutions, please get in touch directly with me or reach out to us via our website, www.aspironsearch.com.